This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Foreclosures knock at the White House. Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. On this Thursday morning, our special coverage of the fallout of the financial crisis starts with housing. After dealing with the credit and banking crisis, the Bush administration looks ready to take on foreclosures. FDIC Chair Sheila Bair is speaking to the Senate Banking Committee today. The Wall Street Journal says she'll offer a plan encouraging banks to keep troubled homeowners in their homes. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch has more.
For months now, there's been a passionate debate on Capitol Hill over whether to assist homeowners who are in over their head. But a consensus is now emerging that we have to slow the rate of foreclosures. James Angel is a professor of finance at Georgetown.
I personally agree with Sheila Bair that it can make good economic sense for the taxpayer to make an investment through some kind of tax credit to help resolve this in a smooth way.
But renegotiating mortgage terms is difficult because loans have been parceled into complex securities. To make matters worse, some homes have second mortgages, bringing another set of players to the table. And no one wants to bail out speculators.
When you've got somebody who's underwater on their mortgage, and they can afford to pay the payments on the current market value, but not on their existing level of debt, our society has an interest in keeping that person in the house.
RealtyTrack says foreclosure filings in the third quarter were up 71% from a year ago. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Alan Greenspan will also go in front of Congress today. In prepared statements, the former Fed chief says the current crisis is, quote, a once-in-a-century credit tsunami. New applications for unemployment rose 15,000 last week to 478,000. Jobless claims above 400,000 are considered a sign of recession. Right now, the Dow is down 85 points, just over a percent, to 84.33. The NASDAQ is down 21 points, 1.3%, to 15.94. The S&P 500 is down 10, 1.2% to 885. Markets in Europe are still lower, and all of Asia was in the red today. Let's turn now to Marketplace's Scott Tong in Shanghai. Scott, we know earnings worries are part of the drops in Asia. What's the bigger picture?
Global recession. That's the fear that the markets are worrying about. A couple weeks ago, we thought about the industrialized countries, and we knew they were going in the wrong direction. But we thought maybe we still have these emerging markets that the world can kind of rely on. It doesn't seem like we have those anymore. South Korea on this side of the world, which used to be the poster child of economic reform and growth, it's seeing its currency tanking. We know Pakistan has gone to the IMF for help, and Hungary is going through this currency crisis. So it doesn't seem like there's anywhere to hide in the world anymore. And the markets are reacting to that fear, even though some of the fundamentals of these economies don't necessarily look that bad.
Well, that's the thing, Scott. The emerging markets especially were not as exposed to the toxic assets.
Right.
Why are things moving so quickly then?
What has moved really quickly is the world of currency. It's turned upside down in a hurry. Before this crisis, the dollar and the yen were weak against most of the currencies in the world. Well, that has just flipped, because investors have pulled out of these emerging economies. So that's hurt those countries. And it's hurt all the investors who bet on some of those countries. And so they're flocking to the safety of the dollar and the yen.
All right. Marketplace's Scott Tong in Shanghai. Thanks so much, Scott.
You're welcome.
Listening to the Morning Report for Thursday, October 23rd at marketplace.org. Automakers are really hurting these days. Billionaire Kurt Kerkorian sold off part of his stake in Ford this week. Chrysler and GM are talking merger, but financing the deal won't be easy. Yesterday, Michigan's congressional delegation asked the federal government to help Detroit's carmakers and lenders, which brings up that word again, bailout. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports.
The auto industry already got help from Washington this year in the form of $25 billion in loan guarantees. Still, in an interview with CNBC last week, Chrysler CEO Robert Nardelli was asked straight up, do the automakers need more?
Well, I mean, I think that remains to be seen. We're doing everything we know how to do.
Nardelli wouldn't comment on a possible merger with GM, but Jesse Toprak, an industry analyst at Edmunds.com, says consolidation won't get the auto industry out of its current jam.
Any kind of collaborations in the short term actually costs more money sometimes because you have to eliminate dealerships, you have to eliminate jobs. In the short term, that means a lot of cash outflow.
That, he says, could put U.S. automakers even further behind their competition abroad.
Without spending money on a new wave of products, it's going to be very difficult for them to catch up in the long term.
So is more government intervention needed? David Cole is chairman of the Center for Automotive Research. He says allowing any of the big three to fail would be far worse than propping up the industry with taxpayer dollars.
You know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Cole says job losses in Detroit could cascade to dealerships and suppliers. And he says a major failure would likely lead to more than a million layoffs nationwide. Cole claims cost-cutting and the falling price of oil have put the industry on the threshold of a golden era. If only private investors weren't so scared. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Hey, maybe someday those cars will run on pond scum. Today in Seattle, a group of scientists, investors, and entrepreneurs gather for the second annual Algae Biomass Summit, looking at algae as a biofuel. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner reports on algae's potential.
Algae is a green muck, but it can produce oil and has the potential to produce lots of it for biodiesel someday. Brian Fan at the Clean Tech Group says algae's enjoyed a huge surge in venture capital investment this year.
I think a lot of it really is a recognition that other types of biofuels have serious challenges and rely on some form of agriculture.
Which means competing with land for food. Algae, on the other hand, can be grown in open ponds or industrial-sized tanks. But experts say mass production of any biofuel is still 5 to 10 years away. Industry consultant John Sheehan.
These algae have to be able to grow at least 5 times more productively than they currently do.
Maybe that's why even the keynoter at today's summit hasn't invested in pond scum yet. But Vinod Khosla's assistant tells us the famed venture capitalist keeps looking. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
American International Group, AIG, has agreed to freeze $19 million in compensation for a former chief executive and $600 million for other execs. The U.S. government, as you probably know, bailed out AIG. New York's attorney general has demanded that AIG stop extravagant expenditures and recover millions of dollars in unreasonable payments or face legal action. As part of the government takeover, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson brought in an old friend, Ed Liddy, former chairman of Allstate Insurance, to help right the ship at AIG.
The boss will see you now.
Today on Conversations from the Corner Office, Marketplace's Kai Rizdahl talks to Ed Liddy about the challenge of rescuing AIG and having U.S. taxpayers as his new boss.
Is there a chance that AIG might still fail after all of this?
You know, never is a big word. I think we've got it well in hand. The federal government's idea was to help AIG emerge from this crisis in an orderly way. And I think we're doing exactly that. So thanks to the life preserver that they've thrown us, I think we've made good progress. And I think the chances are very, very remote.
What's your sense of obligation then to the group of people who are now your biggest shareholder, the American taxpayer?
Well, I want to repay them. We, the people of AIG, we want to repay them every single penny that we have to borrow. We want to repay them their interest. And then in the current structure coming out of this, the government will own 80% of the company. Whether that continues going forward or not, I don't know. I think the government approach to financial companies in distress, if you look at it, it certainly has evolved over time from when Fannie and Freddie first got in trouble to what they've done for the bank. So whether we're able to participate in some of the more contemporary versions of what they've done to save companies or not remains to be seen.
How long is it going to take before AIG is a completely healthy, functioning company?
You know, I would think by the end of next year, the assets that we have to sell, we'd like to sell sooner rather than later. And I think we can make real progress paying down that debt early in mid part of next year or so. So I think by the end of 2009, you'll see AIG emerge as a different entity, but a very healthy entity.
Where's the culpability here for this mess that we find ourselves in? Because people out there want to blame somebody.
Yeah, you know, I'm not about, Kai, I'm not about looking backwards. I am all about the future and trying to solve the problem. There'll come a point in time when probably others smarter than me can begin to answer that question. Right now, all of my energies go towards the future, towards seizing the future for this company and our employees.
Ed Liddy, the CEO of AIG. Mr. Liddy, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
For the last 7 weeks, machinists at Boeing have been on strike. The walkout has wiped out nearly a month of aircraft production. Boeing reported a 38% drop in earnings yesterday. Now the company says some orders for its new 787 Dreamliner will probably be delayed. Today in Washington, negotiations continue under the watchful eye of a federal mediator. Marketplace's John Dimsdale has that story.
Almost 27,000 factory workers have been living on $150 per week strike pay since the walkout began September 6th. Boeing's commercial aircraft factories have been shut down, and the company's hope for the future, the 787 Dreamliner, is already 16 months behind schedule. And that hurts, according to Standard & Poor's economist David Weiss.
Boeing had been gaining a lot of orders at the expense of Airbus because Airbus had had such long delivery lags on some of the planes. Now Boeing's delivery lags are going up. This puts Airbus back into the game.
Still, Boeing has $350 billion in new aircraft orders. And even though it's losing as much as $100 million a day, Boeing is likely to withstand union demands for more job security and less outsourcing, says industry analyst Richard Abulafia.
Given their strong financial position and the strength of their defense side, there are no doubts that the company can continue to ride this strike out for months to come.
Boeing is one of the country's biggest exporters, and the federal negotiator says a strike settlement is a high priority. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Obama will air a half-hour primetime special next week on three major television networks. John McCain will not. Marketplace's Steve Henn takes a look at McCain's options with a campaign strapped for cash.
John McCain's cut back on TV spending in New Hampshire, Wisconsin, Colorado, Maine, and Minnesota. He's pulled the plug on Michigan.
You know, he's in essence in a shouting match with a man with a megaphone, so he can't win that contest.
Evan Tracy runs the Campaign Media Analysis Group and tracks ad buys for candidates. He says to counter, McCain needs the equivalent of a political brush fire.
He has to look for ways to amplify his message beyond advertising spending because it won't be competitive in these final 2 weeks with Obama probably outspending him at least 2-1 overall and probably 4-5 and 6-1 in some of these battleground media markets.
Obama's campaign has used his TV buying power to create new swing states out of those that were once safely red. Shanto Iyengar teaches political advertising at Stanford. He says that makes McCain's mission even harder.
They're going to have to invest scarce advertising dollars in states that in the past were typically taken for granted.
If McCain's forced to spend money in North Carolina or Indiana, he has to cut back in Florida or Ohio. While Senator Obama's running a 50-state campaign with national airtime, McCain is micro-targeting.
Calling for John McCain and the RNC.
Using robocalls.
You need to know that Barack Obama has worked closely with domestic terrorist Bill Ayers.
Tracy says these cheap robocalls can deliver extremely negative messages to receptive audiences without risking a backlash that a similar ad on TV might stir up.
At the end of the day, it'll be a negative message that cuts through for Senator McCain.
And if he's going to win,
he needs to be more negative. I mean, I know people probably cringe when they hear that.
But Tracy says McCain's best weeks in the campaign were months ago, when McCain spent his time attacking his opponent and the press.
He's the biggest celebrity in the world.
For creating a cult of personality out of a political campaign. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
It does seem everything's softening in this economy. Madame Tussauds Wax Museum in D.C. is trying to keep attendance from melting by cutting admission prices. You can now see a waxy President Bush, Bob Woodward, and Jackie O for $10. That's less than half the price a year ago. Share your view of the economy at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Thank you for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.